You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 28 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks, Head of Research at FAB Wealth and Security, talking markets, talking results, talking S&P at 3,000. Peter Major, can mining operate safely under COVID-19? And then Jay Paul, he's Curo's online business manager, taking schools online. We'll dig around how that is going to work. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. SA is planning a $357 billion infrastructure fund, the ANC says. And from CNBC, Pompei declares that Hong Kong is no longer autonomous from China, threatening trade with the US. Morning markets, US green overnight, the S&P up 1.5%, back above 3,000, as I said. That's the first time since 5th of March. Oddly, that is the date of South Africa's first COVID-19 case. NASDAQ up 0.8 higher. Asia all green. Tokyo and Sydney some 1.2% higher. Commodities red. Brent and West Texas off 2.8 and 4% respectively. Gold, couple of cents higher. ZAR, 1737. And the top 40 opening calls looking for around 1% green to the opening later this morning.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Chantal Marks. She's Head of Research at FNB Wealth and Investment. Chantal, morning. Appreciate your time this morning. Next, touch on the Pepco results. The results themselves were okay, but they weren't under lockdown. Post-lockdown, I mean, they lost almost half a billion to end of March. They're estimating perhaps another 5 billion during April. Are they going to be able to claw this back? Will there be pent-up demand? Is clothing something which, if we don't buy on the first day, will come back a month later as distinct from, if I don't have a drink in April, I'm not going to have that drink in June. Chantal, you there?
Yes,
there we go. Finally, you're back. I was touching on Pepco. They've reported significant sale losses during the lockdown. No surprise to that. I expect they can claw some of that back simply because this is clothing. We're going to need it. And also they're in the right spot of the market where they're targeting a cheaper product.
Yeah, when I scratched through the full results note, which is now presented in a beautiful PDF and no longer on sale, I saw that they said that very strong sales growth were recorded in May. And they attributed that to pent-up demand as well as the timing of social grant payments. And you'll remember in April, a lot of random things were also not up for sale. Mm. Personally, I have a baby. I could not buy my baby clothes in April. And I think that many other people were in a similar position in terms of purchasing winter clothing, for example. Whether or not that will extend into June and July remains to be seen. But I think that they're very well positioned in terms of, by far, having the lowest price points in the market, both for clothing and for general merchandise.
Yeah, and you make a good point. Your baby needs those clothes. You might be a month late, but you can't just pass on it in any strength. The Woolies update, locally, food okay, fashion not so good. That's no surprises. Australia remains their problem. They're talking around getting suspension of their covenant testing from Australasian funders, perhaps another 100 million of Aussie dollars. That's a billion and change in support for their Oz operations. Australia remains the disaster that, frankly, truthfully, keeps on taking.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what was really disappointing out of this update was the fact that they were going to commit more money from the South African business, which seems to be ticking along nicely, particularly in food, to this Australian business. This just further entrenches the Australian business into group. One possible way of getting out of Australia was perhaps looking at a possible unbundling of that business and kind of separating it from Woolworths Group. But because it now owes Woolworths Group so much money, that makes it quite difficult to achieve. Another issue here is that even if you now value David Jones and the Australian business at zero, which a lot of analysts do, it's probably worth less than that because it's a drain on group cash.
Yeah.
So really disappointing from their side. Probably good because they're not getting the rights offer. But still, I view this as very negative.
In my sense, the new CEO stepped into the hot seat recently. Often a new CEO kind of wants to sweep things clean. One of those things to sweep clean might be Australia. You mentioned it, perhaps unbundling a sale of it. But under lockdown environments, you know, and a pandemic, that's going to be a tough ask.
Yeah, I think the timing of his arrival was very unfortunate from his perspective, and also for the business. I think that there were a couple of things in Australia that was required to kind of get that business in tip-top shape for perhaps a sale. We know the new CEO was also a mergers and acquisitions guy back in the day, so that's kind of where the expectation for possible sale or unbundling of that business came from. You also had Elizabeth Street, which is a huge store for David Jones, which was expected to come back online and trade fully again, and then COVID-19 hit. So it is very unfortunate, but the reality is that this has now reduced the probability of possibly getting rid of the Australian business, which I think is probably bad for the Woolworths investment case overall.
What do you make? S&P closed back above 3,000 last night. It was at that level 12 weeks ago, almost exactly to the day, 5th of March, was when it slipped below. I look at it and I think I just shake my head. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Things are going back. We're going back to work, but S&P above 3,000 looks head-scratching.
Yes, and I mean, I saw that apparently the Russell 2000 is also at record highs. Now, the Russell 2000 basically speaks to small and middle-sized listed companies in the U.S., whereas the S&P would be largely driven by big technology stocks. So even the smaller industrial-type companies are trading at record levels, which in the middle of a pandemic is very worrying, but it does speak to how confident market participants are in the fact that the Fed will continue to support financial markets overall. But it also seems as if they're trying to look through this specific weak period expected from an economic growth perspective and saying, well, these conditions aren't going to last forever. In my view, I think that there are still a couple of bad news points that could come out and surprise the market. So I think that things look a little bit on the lofty side right now, but I think probably everyone else thinks so too, which usually is a dangerous thing because it could just surprise you and stay at these levels for a very long time.
It absolutely could, and you make the point, it's confidence in the Fed, and that's certainly what is driving markets right now. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, F&B Wealth and Investment, appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Peter Major now. He's Director of Mining at Mergence Corporate Services. Peter, morning. Thanks for your time. Mining safely under COVID-19, under social distancing and the like. Is this even possible in an underground environment?
Look, everything's possible, but it's what kind of price we're going to pay, and it's what kind of risk we're prepared to take. But we might as well be saying, are we ready to start mining on Neptune or Uranus? You know, everybody's really in uncharted ground here. Yes, we know how to go underground with people who have TB, with people who have HIV. We know how to screen for those, and we know how to, I'm speaking on the mining side when I say we know how to, we know how to live with it, work with it, handle it in a reasonably acceptable way. And reasonably acceptable means the government agrees, the workers agree, the unions agree, and the mine agrees. So what's the acceptable degree of the coronavirus? We don't know. This thing is too new. We're dealing in months here, whereas when we even started dealing with HIV, it had been known for a few years. And the TB, it's been known for 140 years. So this is so new, but hey, everything has to happen in nanoseconds nowadays. Everything is happening in real time. And it's important to realize if we just stop the mines, there's 450,000 of the highest paid blue collar workers and many of the white collar workers in the country. And we know, where does the country get foreign exchange other than tourism, agriculture, and mining? And we know where tourism is now. So it's a national imperative that the mines are able to keep running, but they have to operate safely and they have to operate productively because they're not like FAA. If they lose money more than a couple quarters, they will close. They will go into receivership.
And it's that price. I mean, you mentioned the price. And I mean, the one thing, I mean, obviously, we're going to see increased costs even when they get back to 100% operations. Managing a pandemic, kilometers underground is going to incur costs, trying to do as much safety as possible. Commodity prices have held up well under the pandemic. I can't help thinking that part of that holding up, yes, theories about infrastructure spending. We've got a government talking about that locally. I think we're going to see more of that. But also, frankly, less production was putting less supply into the market. And perhaps that was helping. As we go back up, we might see prices down. These mines are going to get pressured from their income as well as their cost side.
Ironically enough, the prices have held up because even though production has been falling in quite a few countries in the mines, demand has fallen quite a bit, but it's almost had the same amount of production fall. So yes, commodity prices have held up very well. Gold, we understand. You know, it's so much confusion and people are scared. But we can see why the gold price has held up. And we only produce 3% of the world's gold, and even though we got about half of the known gold here. And there's a difference between underground mines and open pit mines. The open pit mines I've spoken to, they think they can handle the virus. You know, the men are far enough apart. They're in machines. They say it's a lot of work, but we think we got protocol that we can work with it. We can handle it, just barely. The poor underground mines are just starting, and I don't know how you're going to handle this underground because putting 60 men in a cage. You know,
well, exactly, to get down, and most the majority of our mining, because we've been pulling those commodities out of the ground for what 100, 120 years in some cases. Most of our mines are underground. We've got some open cost, but most is going to involve going down in a cage lift.
Look, if South Africa's got any salvation, certainly on the mining side, it's the diversity of minerals we've got. If we were just dependent on gold and diamonds, like we were for nearly 80, 90 years, we would have one gigantic problem here on the mines. But because gold is reduced to such a small percentage, we've got manganese, we've got chrome, we've got coal, we've got iron ore, we've got fluorspar. And those heavy mineral sands, those are almost all surface operations. So there's nothing like diversification. You don't need Warren Buffett to tell you that. It's the only free lunch you get in life. We've got good diversification here. We're not just Zambia, Chile dependent on copper. We've got great diversification in minerals and in underground, in surface, and in 50-50. And we've got to use it to our advantage, and everybody's got to help. Government, unions, citizens, communities.
That's a great point. We tend to think of our mining as PGMs and gold. Truthfully, there's a lot more to our mining than just PGM and gold. And if they're open cost, they're going to be cost, but it's going to be easier. We'll leave that there. Peter Major, Director of Mining at Mergence Corporate Solutions.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Jay Paul. He's online business manager at Akiro. Jay, morning. Appreciate your time. Your sister company, Stadio, has their Milpark distance learning. Akiro moving into that space. Is this a new initiative, a relatively new, where Akiro, which is obviously schools rather than tertiary, offering online learning?
Hi, Simon. Thanks so much for your time. Clarify, our offering is actually for the primary and high school level, and it's not the tertiary level. But yes, actually, it's a new venture from our side. But actually, it's really just leveraging what we already have going at Kura schools at the moment. We've actually done quite a bit of investment in our IT and digitizing our entire learning process over the past few years. And so that's why all our Kura schools at the moment themselves are able to just teach online as though there was no lockdown. So our students have just been able to continue. And we had quite a few parents still calling us and asking us outside of our Kura network saying, could we look at an online solution for them? They were not necessarily near Kura school. And that's where we felt, okay, let's actually launch this and actually provide a service that's much needed.
Are you working across all grades 1 to 12, or are you starting perhaps with a more narrow range of grades for the school kids?
So it's a narrow range at the moment. So we start from grades 4 to 9, and then we'll phase in grade 10 next year. We may phase in other grades as well. But the smaller grades in particular is more trickier because there's a lot more parent involvement. And what we're really trying to do is provide a solution for parents that will be a lot more convenient for them, where they have to, they may just have to supervise but not actually mm-hmm. teach or be an active participant in the learning process with the child.
And this is standalone. This is not, there's no classroom-based teaching. This is really for someone perhaps living in one of our more remote areas, as you point out, not near a Kira school. They can literally now just move their children within the grades of 4 to 9 and move them into an online environment, some supervision from the parents, but get their schooling, write the exams at the end of the year.
Yes, and I think, but also it's not just for the rural environment. I think we're going to find that over the next few years, we're going to find the whole work from home mm-hmm. scenario becoming the norm. I mean, we saw even there's an article out recently in the press about how the banks are just looking at asking a lot of their staff to just work from home, even though they could actually come back to the office. And so I think we're going to see a lot more of that going forward. And for parents that are both working and working from home in particular, it's quite a stressful thing to look after their child as well. At home, but at the same time, it's quite stressful to think that their child could be going to an environment where there could be COVID, etc. So that's why I think that we're going to find that quite a few parents will opt for this solution where they could have their child at home, the child's academic career is looked after with a very good offering, and at the same time, they can also work from home and not have to participate too much in the child's learning process.
Yeah, I take that point. Work from home is going to be a new trend, and you know, I'm not a parent, but I know a lot of parents who suddenly had to become teachers, and that was not their skill set in the least. You're focusing on mathematics, science, coding, robotics, that makes sense. But I'm assuming you're doing the broader subjects. At the end of the year, they will write the traditional exam. And when you're doing the grade 12, the matrix, they will come out with their qualification that can get them into a tertiary institution.
Yes, yeah. Like actually, so from our side, why we in terms of the subject range, we do offer all the standard subjects. And why we emphasize the coding and robotics is that we actually offer that as an additional subject choice, mm-hmm. and it's actually something that we make compulsory for all grades, and it's just purely because of where the world is going, and we do believe that those are essential skills, regardless of what stream that you decide to take in the final year of the schooling, and also at grade 12, we'll actually the learners will write the IEB exam, mm-hmm. and which obviously opens up the doors for all tertiary institutions in South Africa.
At the moment, you've got a grade, if I come in, or if I had a kid who came in this year at grade 9, you say you're going to increase the higher grades as you phase in from next year. I'm assuming grade 9 is currently your top, but next year you'll open 11. And as that grade 9 student moves through the years, you will open ahead of them so that they can sort of continue their entire education.
Yes, yeah. So basically, the grade 9s are joined now. They'll be able to move on to grade 10 next year and so forth. So every year we just make sure that we open up the following year for them, and then they will go on to write their grade 12 matric exam as well to us.
I think this is great. This is Jay Paul. He's online business manager at Kira, talking about their new online schools for students, not for tertiary. That's it for today. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 on moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app. The podcast, where all good podcasts are found, from 7 a.m. Chat to us on social media, hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening, my guests for their time, and producer Cordora and sound boffin Eddie for putting the show together. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the Money.